Hi, I'm Marquesa, and this is Conversations with Quesa.
Now I know this might seem strange. Let me know if I'm out of order for stepping to you this way. See, I've been watching you for a while. I just gotta let you know that I'm really feeling your style, and I had to know your name. Leave you with my number, and I hope that you will call me someday. If you want, you can give me yours too. If you don't, then I ain't mad at you. We could still be cool.
Okay, you guys. So, did you notice that the intro was a little different? So, what does the coronavirus have to do with Music Soul Child, huh? Absolutely nothing. Okay, I decided to have a different intro for two reasons. One, I just learned how to beatbox this year. Actually, it was last year. And I'm terrible at it, still, obviously, and that's the only song I can do, so that's what you guys are getting. And then I just wanted to change things up a little bit. I don't know, I'm thinking like maybe I'll have a different intro this season, and we'll see. So let's get into it. Today's podcast is going to be further about the novel coronavirus, COVID-19. But it's particularly going to be how the coronavirus is affecting our food supply chain, when to stock up, what to buy, why shelves are empty, and how to react to it. And I'm going to split this into two parts because it's really long. And, well, actually, there's two reasons. So, the reason I'm splitting it into two parts is, one, the last podcast, was super long, and I think it was hard for people to listen to the whole thing in its entirety. And the second reason is the audio file for the last podcast was super long, which meant that the audio file was quite large, so I had to reduce the sound quality to shrink it, and then I had to cut it and clip parts to upload fragments, and frankly, the whole thing was a mess, and the sound quality didn't come out as great. So, I'm splitting it into two parts. Let's get into it. Here's my primary piece of advice. Stay calm. Look, I know this can be particularly obnoxious advice at a time like this, but trust me, it's in your best interest. Stay calm. Oh, stay calm, Marquesa? That's what you suggest? Why didn't I think of that? Of course, just stay calm. Stay calm when my only source of income that has been or is about to be shut down? Stay calm when my bills are still due despite me not having any income stream nor cash flow? Stay calm when I stopped by the store after work to get some toilet paper and there wasn't so much as a frickin' collection of dust particles joined together on a shelf that I could buy. Stay calm when my cousin Oliver looked online for toilet paper and Amazon was selling it, three left in stock, eight rolls, for a reasonable $75. Stay calm when every time I log into social media, I see a mix of people acting like it's doomsday and others pretending like it's just another day in the neighborhood. Let me get this straight, Marquesa. You want me to stay calm when the SCROTUS, the so-called President of the United States, Trump, and his cabinet members have been telling us the coronavirus is nothing for months, despite experts and scientists saying otherwise, and now he's declared a national state of emergency. Stay calm, right?
I'm freaking out!
You have genuine concerns, and the answers to those concerns are either not obvious, not plausible, or, to be honest, you might just simply not be ready to hear them yet. And trust me, I completely understand. You know, if I'm upset about something that just happened, or I'm currently like going through something, and someone has the well-intentioned audacity to say something like, "Stay calm. Things could be way worse." Or, "Everything happens for a reason." I secretly hope a bird flies over and just poops directly into their mouth. Just boop. So I get it. But panic is not only going to make things worse, it's going to breed more panic. And you know what else? It actually doesn't change the external circumstances. They still exist. The coronavirus is still floating around. Now we're just panicking. You know, now all you've done is driven around frantically to 6 different stores and wound up with 20 cans of mushrooms, 4 jars of marmalade, and 2 cases of water bottles that were rationed off at the stores, all of which only produced more panic because you don't know when things are going to be in stock. You don't know what you should be preparing for and how serious this thing really is. Epidemiological threats, like the novel coronavirus, COVID-19, can cause special kinds of panic, right? Special kinds of confusion and special kinds of disruption. And amidst the flurry of misinformation mixed with facts, mixed with memes aimed at being harmless, but ultimately they carry more subconscious and lasting psychological weight than is understood by those digesting said memes, it can be a perfect storm for hysteria. You know, hair on fire, running around, hoarding a garage full of toilet paper, and lighting anyone's butt on fire who so much as blinks too close to you. And here's the truth. The coronavirus is having and will continue to have a great financial impact on the economy and how we lead our lives. We don't know for how long, and we don't know to what extent. And that seems to be causing the most alarm. So what I want to try to do is to steer us back into a calm, collected, thoughtful, reasonable, and helpful direction. What I want to try to do is answer these questions and concerns in hopes of mitigating the budding fear underneath, and in hopes of combating the pervasive misinformation that continues to circulate. Okay, let's get into it. Why are some people panicking and others are acting like, meh, I couldn't care less? How we react to crises is primarily reflective of how we naturally process stress and anxiety, right? You know, it's our coping mechanisms, our general understanding of things, who we look up to, who we surround ourselves with. And as therapists would always say, you know, how we were attachment theory and how we grew up and stuff. So I'm going to resist the urge to get into heavy cognitive and psychological stuff, but all of those things play their part. So, you know, if your friend Jack is sending memes and joking about the coronavirus incessantly, meanwhile, you feel a very real sense of threat and anxiety, you know, don't take it to mean that he's some spiritual transcendent who's tapped into the art of reasonable acceptance. He's not, and he hasn't. It's simply his way of coping. And also, don't take it personally. You know, examining yourself and wondering if you shouldn't be as concerned and what's going on with you. No, he just processes things in a different way than you do. Not better, not worse, just different. But as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to being on either side of the scale, right, hysteria or complacency, both are highly problematic. So you want to aim for that sweet spot. Proper concern, level-headed reasoning, and sober clarity. Not blatant disregard, not drumming up conspiracy theories as to where it came from and who created the virus, not buying everything in sight just because you can. No. You want that sweet spot, aiming to be aware, cautious, alert, and calm. So as promised, I'm going to address some of the concerns I've heard swirling around. My hopes are that empowering you and myself with knowledge will help mitigate disproportionate or irrational concern, combat misinformation, and allow you the space to relax with knowing that you are doing the best you can with what you have and what you know in this moment. So let's begin by answering the questions we have all been wondering. And then we'll get into the real economic effects and walk back through some of the steps further. We'll touch on it in this episode, probably get to it in the next episode. Why are so many stores running low on inventory for supplies like canned or frozen food, water, and toilet paper? This is a loaded question. And we can answer it in a few ways, but let's start simple. It's a supply and demand issue. Some people call it panic shopping, but ultimately all it is that, you know, the demand sharply and dramatically increased for these people or for these products in a short amount of time, and the stores didn't have enough supply on hand to keep up with the demand. You know, no one was prepared nor anticipated things to unfold the way they have. And that's the simple answer. You know, demand increased sharply and dramatically in a short amount of time, therefore supply, and they didn't have a backstock. The longer answer requires us to walk it back a few steps to understand food distribution, the national and international supply chain, and how it all works. And yes, finally something I could say I have some experience in dealing with, okay? This is what I was involved with during my long tenure at Rockstar Energy Drink. And I know, okay? If you followed my social media at all over the years, you would have assumed that all I did was dance, hide in boxes to prank people, and work out in the conference room. But no, okay? I did a little bit more. Back to the empty shelves at grocery stores. Here's a general, oversimplified example of how most products get to our major grocery stores. It goes from producer to wholesaler or distributor, or both, to the retailer or the store. So the first person in this food distribution model is the producer. Okay, so the producer is the starting point for this example. Again, I'm keeping things simple. They quite literally produce the product. Maybe this is a farm, maybe this is a manufacturing facility, maybe this is in the US, maybe this is in another country. In any regard, they produce the product that will eventually wind up on the grocery store shelves. Oh, and PS, okay? My general understanding is that farms, they are like the lowest on the totem pole and usually treated pretty poorly in this whole giant conventional food distribution channel thing. But evenly distributing wealth, that hasn't been a thing in the US for a while. So you're not shocked and neither am I. All right. So first is the producer. Then the wholesaler or the distributor. Most grocery stores get their products through wholesale or bulk distributors, you know, with specialty items often coming from manufacturers directly. In the conventional distribution model, there's only a handful of distributors that basically do everything, Sysco being at the top, right? It's actually the world's largest broadline food distributor, which basically means it services a wide variety of accounts with an equally wide variety of products. And then after the wholesaler and distributor, it goes to the retailer or the grocery store through various carriers and whatever else. So that's it. Producer, wholesaler, distributor, retailer. And that is like the really quick general outline of the supply chain in this case scenario. So what's actually happening is the demand for products is putting pressure in a downward motion throughout the supply chain. Large group of us have purchased products much, much more than anyone could have anticipated. The producer didn't anticipate it, the distributor, the retailer, or maybe they did, but it was too late. So the actual inventory that sits on shelves or in the back, it ran out. So the retailers are relying on their quote-unquote backroom distributors who keep stock on hand to deliver more. And as the distributor's inventory runs low, then they will look to the producer to kick things into gear and produce more. And there is a lot of stuff I'm skipping over in between. It's really complex with a lot of twists and turns, but I'm trying to keep this short. Okay, so according to Goker Aiden and Tinglong Dai, whose name I love, and if I ever have a pet, it is either going to be named Chickpea or Ting, and maybe Tinglong because that's such a cute name. Okay, anyways, According to Gokher, Aiden, and Tinglong Dai, both experts in operations management and business analytics from the Johns Hopkins University Carey Business School, the coronavirus is having its effect on the import of supplies to retailers. And the reason this matters is because China is a huge source of finished goods and components around the globe, which includes the US. So it is possible that we could see producers, manufacturers, suspend operations until they get their supplies, which ultimately might mean that shelves aren't stocked with all the products all of the time, which is what we are only beginning to experience now. What else could affect operations greatly throughout the entire supply chain is the lack of workers and closure of borders. According to the New York Times, Thai importers and drivers, Mongolian coal distributors, and the entire sector of travel, they've all been hit really hard. The thing is, if a supplier shuts down, and not just any supplier, but a giant, globally present supplier shuts down, then the ripple effects extend far and deep. And if a consumer, not just any consumer, but a giant, globally present consumer who, before Trump launched the trade war against China, purchased more than one quarter of America's soybeans, shuts down, then the ripple effects can extend far and deep. And it's not just the US. The rest of the world already is or is going to be impacted similarly. The coronavirus is a big deal economically. You know, it affects damn near everything. And it's not something that happens and then goes away immediately after, like nothing ever happened. Like, the ramifications will be felt for a while. So, you know, when you see giant lines and empty shelves at the stores, think of the supply chain and understand that the retailers, and the end-of-the-line consumers are just a reflection of the systematic pressures that are present throughout the entire chain. According to WBUR, quote, Yasi Sheffi, director of MIT's Center for Transportation Logistics, said that the current run on grocery stores is like what happens before a snowstorm, only worse. People fear the unknown, he said, and they're prepping for what they can do for what could be weeks, even months of uncertainty. When will stores restock products? Tough question to answer. Because that would mean having basic knowledge of the trajectory of, you know, the COVID-19 coronavirus. It wouldn't, you know, mean knowing where you specifically live, where you shop, and what products you are wondering about, but we can reasonably make our guesses, so let's do that. Small businesses will be hit the hardest. They almost always are during times like this. According to Tinglong Dai, the expert in business analytics and operation management that we talked about earlier, but you didn't forget that because his name is great, he said, quote, the impact of stockpiling depends on the size of a business. Larger businesses such as Costco, Walmart, and Target tend to be more robust because of their centralized procurement strategy, you know, better inventory control, and diverse supply bases. So this particular case may well be an opportunity for them to gain in their market shares when the consumers value product availability. But for smaller businesses, this could be a very vulnerable moment because stockpiling creates variability in their demand. And variability is hard for smaller businesses to absorb because they don't have the level of scale and flexibility required to maintain a reasonable level of product availability at times of demand shocks. End quote. And this is what that is, a demand shock. You see, excessive stockpiling can create this sketchy cycle. Not to mention it's unnecessary. And the cycle goes like this, right? Person goes into a store, starts stockpiling stuff in a panic, that is, buys excessively. Another person does the same thing, then many people do the same thing, then other people who are mildly concerned but not in a panic go to the store to grab a couple things for their 14-day supply kit. And they see that the shelves are empty and they panic! maybe they respond to the panic by purchasing anything and everything left. You know, all senses leaving their bodies. Canned mushrooms? Gross, but I need them all. Kidney beans? Gosh dang it, fine, I'll take 30 cans. Oh, and by the way, you guys, total side note, but Slate ran an article on the items that are most often left behind in grocery stores, and I have no idea how robust their evidence is for this article, other than random pictures they have, but apparently on the list is chickpea pasta. Okay, all I have to say is, y'all are sleeping on chickpea pasta. It's delicious, and if you don't think so, I suspect a user error on cooking it. Anyway, panic buying breeds more panic buying. And the retailers most equipped to handle this are the big dogs, fortunately and unfortunately, respectively. So stores like Costco, Target, Walmart, Albertsons, they'll have a greater ability to tap into a greater variety of resources faster. According to Marketplace, quote, self-distribution works brilliantly, particularly in crises, says Bert Flickinger. Why do these people have such better names than I do? Flickinger? Are you kidding me? Okay, says Bert Flickinger, managing director at Strategic Resource Group. Continued quote, like Albertsons, like Kroger, like BJ's, like Costco, they all can go from one truck a day to several trucks a day, 7 days a week, and restock the stores around the clock. You know, big stores have 24/7 access to inventory and their own fleet of trucks. And Anath Lyer, who teaches operations management at Purdue University, said that they have something else the little guys lack. Lots of cash. End quote. So the short answer to the question of when your store will be restocked is, it is being restocked all of the time. Unless it's a small privately owned business, then that's relative to where it's located and how they are operating with their supplies. And the short answer to how long the panic buying will continue and if chains can support it in a sustained way is, we don't know. But, and it's a huge, big booty of a butt, if you are concerned, think of this, you guys, and genuinely think of this. The people who have stocked up are stocked up. They largely don't have a need to purchase more. You know, this will last them. And some of them, it'll last a long time. So while producers work overtime to crank out supplies and distributors work with carriers to get the stores what they need, the stores should be restocked with those supplies. I can't answer when, and I'm not involved with the close enough capacity, so I don't even know the intricacies. But, you know, what I can say is when I worked at Rockstar Energy Drink, I learned that there are a whole slew of variables that can affect how much of what gets where by when. Weather, logistics, manufacturing issues, supply issues from an import level, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we can't answer that completely. But what I can say is that I am confident in the system and us as people, a love-driven community, to figure things out, to help those in need, and to come together to support each other. And I know, that sounds like the most hippie Bali yoga commune thing I could say right now, but you guys, it's true. It's been studied time and again that during times of crises, it's not this like apocalyptic danger zone that people fear it could be. Yeah, sometimes people can act on their fears in crappy ways, but during a genuine crisis, people actually come together to help each other out altruistically. You know, during the hurricanes that tore through many regions in 2017, a wealth of stories emerged of neighbors and complete strangers helping others at their own expense, right? You know, creating rafts to rescue stranded families and even animals, organizing food drives and collecting funds to help those in need. That's that stuff that happens. Like, that's what we do. So, even without that evidence, I believe that people are motivated by this intrinsic, physiological, and probably primal need to band together in times of need and help a brother and sister out. Yes, there are some people who don't belong in that category, but I firmly believe it's the much smaller percentage. So, despite the grocery store's volatility when it comes to product supply and availability, It's important to be hopeful, understanding of the process, calm, and rational. Now I want to take a brief moment to discuss an argument I see a lot from mostly uninformed people on social media. It goes something like this. Bruh, you're so dumb. Don't you see that you're contributing to the downfall of the economy by both panic buying and also not going out to eat, not ordering things online, and not traveling? The reality is, you're not dumb. Of course you're not. You're thoughtful. He's ill-informed and taking it out on the wrong person, and that's unfortunate. But yes, both of these actions affect the economy. However, economic interests should not take precedence over public, personal, and global health concerns. And I know, right? The two bleed into one another, and it can be often be this like complex ball of wax, but that doesn't mean you disregard the virus and continue going about living your life just the way you have been, all because you don't want to contribute to the pressures placed on the economy. The solution isn't to keep purchasing plane tickets and gallivanting around. So, you know, I guess unless they are global economic crisis experts, don't listen to them. And hopefully they'll keep their fly traps closed on the matter because they are a dangerous spread of misinformation to people who don't know any better. By the way, do you guys remember how lit that diss used to be, right? Like, keep your fly trap shut. I remember the first time someone said that to me in elementary school, and I was like, ah, oh, damn, I gotta give it to him. Like, he schooled me. He got me, bro. Fly trap, great. Should I be stocking up? I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I think it's a good idea to stock up regardless of anything else, especially during times of uncertainty. Stock up with a 14-day supply of mostly food and water. The idea, in my mind, is to prepare for, and hopefully you are already taking steps toward, social distancing. Whether it reaches the point of total isolation or not is probably going to be up to you regardless of what the government says. But that's what I'm doing, you know. I'm staying home and limiting any non-essential social contact at all, period, until I have a better understanding of the trajectory, the economy, and the overall virus itself. Like, that's my stance. But I would stick with a 14-day supply of what you need per person in your family or whomever you live with. Resist the temptation to give in to excessive panic buying. That's when you wind up with, you know, a ton of toilet paper and 14 cans of mushroom left over for everyone else, okay? You might be putting others at a huge disadvantage, but I will say all of this is a guess. I'm guessing just as much as the next, so no one really knows how much of what to buy for how long when it comes to a pandemic. But I make my guesses based on the guesses and advice of scientists and experts. And if that's what they say, that's what I'll do. Don't get me wrong, though. You know, I'm not just going to blindly follow them. I'm still going to check them and maniacally sort through all of their sources, scientific journals, and theories. But I will listen in the meantime, nonetheless. All right, here's the golden question. What should I be stocking up on? Here is Marquesa's 14-day supply list suggestions. Alcohol. Isopropyl, at least 70%. Hydrogen peroxide. Bleach. This is probably going to be the most important because once you have this, you can make your own cleaning mixtures by mixing it with water. Hand sanitizer. This will likely be out of stock. And that's okay because you can make your own. Mix alcohol, water, and an essential oil in a spray bottle and boom goes the dynamite. You got yourself a sanitizing spray. But ultimately, the only thing that really matters is the alcohol. The essential oil, that's whatever, just smell good, and the water will help dilute it so you're not burning your hands off. Foods with a long shelf life. Pasta, rice, quinoa, beans, canned and dry. Dried fruits, nuts, soups, broths, bouillon cubes. Those are those little I think you can probably find them in like the spice sections or something. It's like these little cubes and you could just put them in water and it's, there you go. Canned vegetables, fruit, and whatever else comes in a can that you are cool with eating for a while. Frozen food, vegetables, proteins, and if your name happens to be Rose Schroeder, a lot of ice cream. Cold medicine, cough syrup, drops, pills, pain medicine, Tylenol, Advil, prescription meds, and general medicine. Call up your doctors, refill your prescriptions in case of social, you know, you're doing the social distancing thing. Vitamins and immune boosting products. This is a me thing. I do multivitamins, electrolyte replenishing drinks, probiotics, green powders, protein powder. This also may seem odd, but I believe in having nutrient dense things around. Water, filters. The CDC recommends having 1 gallon of water per person per day for an emergency. That may be excessive and tough to get your hands on right now in terms of bottled water, but many of us already have filters that we can use in combination until we can buy more or if we feel good with that. Miscellaneous toiletries, toothpaste, mouthwash, floss. I know you never do it. I'm not your dentist, so I'm not gonna get mad at you, but you need to. And now that you have 14 days to become reacclimated with this whole floss pros, go on with your bad self. Toilet paper and paper towels. Don't go crazy, you guys. Remember, 14 days. Sanitizing cleaning supplies like sprays and wipes. And finally, pet food. That is my list. I have something on my website, though I haven't published my article yet. And I'm going to post something to social media that's just a quick snapshot so you can screenshot that and go to the store with that list if you feel like it. Why is everything so expensive? Because of a little illegal thing called price gouging. Here's Wikipedia's definition on it. Price gouging is a term referring to when a seller increases the prices of goods, services, or commodities to a level higher than is considered reasonable or fair and is actually considered exploitative, potentially to an unethical extent. End quote. I ad-libbed a couple words, whatever. And the California Department of Justice website states that price gouging is, in fact, illegal in California, though there are some loopholes, aren't there always? But for the most part, and the big most part, it's illegal to raise prices of goods and services during a crisis. And it's explicitly illegal to raise prices more than 10% after an emergency has been declared. As of yesterday, March 13th, Trump declared a national state of emergency. So rest assured that prices shouldn't be above the 10% increase. And if they are, while it might not help you right now, you may have grounds for a strong case later in court. Which reminds me, I just realized again that I have to throw in a disclaimer. So you guys know the deal. I'm not a lawyer. Don't use anything I have to say as legal advice. Don't take anything I say in place of that of the professional in the field with which it will be used. I'm just a person, a regular person, trying to empower other regular people and other not so regular people with knowledge so that maybe you can hold unscrupulous people and companies accountable. So please, don't come for me. Why can't we buy as much of a product as we want? You know, why are stores rationing? They are rationing so that there's enough to go around. Think of your neighbors. Think of their neighbors. Think of the fact that everyone might just be in the same boat with the 14-day emergency kit idea. You know, ultimately, what we want to do is to mitigate the fear, anxiety, and completely eradicate the irrational responses to those two things. Remember, in times of crisis, what we often see from a human standpoint is communities coming together to help one another. This entire coronavirus pandemic is alarming. And yeah, a little unnerving. But stay calm, stay hopeful, and trust in your community. Trust in your fellow people. And, you know, sure, okay, there may be some bad apples, there may be some selfish, scared, and uninformed people, but I firmly believe those people make up a smaller percentage than the rest of us. We're all just trying to do what we see is best. So remember, when you are at the store, and if you see long lines, empty shelves, and items being rationed, stay as calm as possible, okay? Also, if you have the emotional and mental fortitude, and if you don't, I completely understand, but if you do, you know, maybe you can be kind to others. Maybe you can inform them, be more understanding, maybe than you ever realized you could be. Be more patient, show generosity. I believe all of those things have a ripple effect. Be optimistic while establishing new life rhythms and habits. Because things aren't the same, but we are all in this together. Oh, and P.S. All right, if I have an extra bottle of something or like an extra roll of toilet paper laying around, which I'm sure I do, and if it comes down to it, I will offer it to those in need. You know, I don't know how that works logistically yet, and I haven't vetted out the processes, but I know this is something that I will do. And I encourage you to do the same. Okay, I saw a picture of a very old woman shopping at a store that had empty shelves, and she had very little product in her cart, and it stabbed me in the heart. I have, I think, probably like an unreasonable and disproportionate amount of like love and care for the elderly. But anyways, she is the one who really could use the help. She's my priority. Not my own dusty 29-year-old, seemingly vibrant and reasonably healthy self. Again, stay calm, seek facts, and let's see if we can get on board with paying attention and being the reasonable, thoughtful, considerate humans that I know we're capable of being. If you guys have any questions for me about this or any other episode, please reach out. It would be super cool if you recorded your message on a voice memo. I don't really care how you get it to me. You can email it, go to my website contact page and send it through there. Just get me an audio file of the question or just reach out to me so that I can answer it and kind of collectively figure out who is asking what. Okay. All right. Until next time.
Cause I'm not trying to pressure you, just can't stop thinking about you. You ain't even really gotta be my girlfriend. I just wanna know your name, and maybe sometime we can hook up, we can hang out, we could just chill. Oh.
Thanks for listening. If you're interested in learning more, you can go to MarquesaSchroeder.com. Again, that's MarquesaSchroeder.com, and the link is in the description. As a final note, I wanted to say, kind of head people off here, I don't want to cross a line or make people feel bad with any of the content I create, including my podcasts. That is not my goal. Yet, sometimes in my good-hearted attempts, I do exactly that. I'm just trying to bring awareness to aspects of society that I believe need more transparency. You know, a large majority of the content I create is based on personal scenarios, personal challenges, and personal struggles. So even though it may seem like I'm pointing the finger at others, I'm really pointing it at myself as well. We are all human. We all have flaws, and we all need to get along. I like to say, you are weird, I am weird, and we need each other to survive, so we might as well not be terrible. Lastly, my content may seem incongruent, but that is by design. We are funny, and we're serious. We are satisfied, and we have the desire for more. So to some degree, the incongruities of being human make life interesting. They exist, so we might as well understand, know, use, embrace, and feel empowered by them. Above all else, I want to remind you, life is good, things are interesting, and people love you.